Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Tuesday, January 20th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're all doing well today. No show yesterday because of the holiday and with coffee. We did have an episode of Inside the Gamecocks, the show, and go check that out. Caught you all up on the various portal acquisitions for the Gamecocks over the weekend. Looks like it's kind of slowing down now. Can't completely rule out anybody else popping in, but the Gamecocks are filling spots and looks like the roster is on its way to being complete. We're going to dive into this portal class as the week goes on, kind of break it all down. But I do think the Gamecocks filled some needs. I think with the offensive line in particular, it's a whole new day at that position, and rightfully so, with I believe seven new offensive linemen joining the program from the portal, three coming in from the high school ranks, and then some leftovers from previous. So that's it's a good thing. Offensive line is a numbers game. You found as well, we all found out in 2023, quality depth is a important part of it. And we'll see kind of how it all shakes out with the starters and what Randy Clements wants to do with his group this coming season. It's an important position, an important room. You saw last night in the Indiana-Miami game in the national championship, the Hoosiers have been going up and down the field on everybody. Well, Miami's defensive line dominated the game. Indiana did win, and had enough to get the win. 317 yards of offense. They did keep the ball for 36 minutes yesterday or last night, so that was an important factor in the Hoosiers national championship victory. But a good defensive line, and you're going to face them in the SEC, even can make a really good offensive line look bad. So you just want to be as good as possible at that spot. It doesn't matter what kind of scheme you run. I love Indiana's scheme. I think they executed at a high level, but Miami was very disruptive with all that and could have won the football game. A blocked punt for a touchdown ended up being the difference last night down in Miami Gardens. Speaking of the Hoosiers, we did a JC and Morgan right after the game last night. Didn't realize it was so late, but thank you all for tuning in. Many of you did. Mike and I just kind of reflected on the season. Very historic. It's the first time since 96 when Steve Spurrier led Florida to the national championship. It was the first championship for Florida ever that a first-time champion had been crowned in college football. It just shows you how hard it is to break through in this sport. It's just it's one of the hardest, most ridiculously tough things to do. In the pro sports, teams go up and down. I mean, you see teams all the time in MLB win the World Series and kind of come out of nowhere or get there. In the NBA, it kind of depends on where the superstars go. Historically, the Cleveland Cavaliers were not very good. But LeBron James goes, they win a title. It just kind of depends on that. There are some bad franchises that don't ever hardly do anything, but there's parity in that league. Everybody kind of has a chance. The NFL is completely set up for everybody to have a chance. Some franchises are better than others, obviously, but it's set up that way. College football is not. College football, I mean, even college basketball, while most of the time your national champion is not a Cinderella, because of the way the tournament's structured, and we'll see kind of how it all goes. There's talk that in basketball the days of the Cinderella are over. I don't know that I completely buy that, although last year was a pretty big example of it. But there's enough to go around. I mean, teams you have first-time champions frequently. And teams kind of go through eras. There are blue bloods in college basketball, but it's a little more open than in football. Football has been a very tight, Mike and I call it the cabal, a tight group of blue bloods that have kind of run the sport. And you can tell with some of the reaction to all this that, some of the blue bloods want to kind of make the rules to where they get the advantage again. Especially those blue bloods with money. Not all the blue bloods have unlimited money, as we've pointed out. But you could tell by some of the comments, wait a minute, we shouldn't even have a cap, and It's just, yeah, really? You don't want a cap? Well, no. Yeah, that's not a surprise. And I'm not sure that after what we saw this season that spending a bunch of money is definitely the answer, because you did have a team on the field last night that spent a bunch of money. You had a team, last year, Ohio State and Notre Dame spent a bunch of money in the 12-team era. But you also have teams that, like an Ole Miss, made the semis, and their total amount isn't crazy. They just do it well, and they have, and they continue to, Ole Miss, quite frankly. But they'll spend where they need to spend, et cetera. So that's kind of the thing. But anyway, the Blue Bloods aren't going to go quietly into that good night and let Indiana and Ole Miss and the college football's vast middle class take over the sport. I don't know that Indiana, as a program, it would even be considered middle class. We kind of went through all that, and maybe they're the ultimate outlier. Maybe things just go back to normal. That happens in sports sometimes. But you kind of look at what they accomplished, and it wasn't just a fluke where, oh, that's a nice team that everybody caught off, got caught off. They caught everybody off guard. I mean, they dominated Alabama and Oregon. Alabama doesn't have, contrary to popular belief, they don't have this gigantic payroll, but they have a lot of great players. And Oregon, spends as much as anybody in the country. That game wasn't even close. And I think too, when you look at it in the 12-team playoff era, with the way they seed it and the rankings that they come up with, and just the general, I mean, it's a hard job. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to beat up on the committee too much, but you don't know who you're going to end up running into. Miami was the last team to get in to the college football playoff, and they were 10th. And for some reason, the committee took 11-1, and rightfully so, because Ole Miss had better wins than A&M. But Ole Miss got Tulane in the first round, and then got a rematch with Georgia. A&M had to play this Miami team that was, oh yeah, they had two losses and snuck in, but they're pretty doggone good from a player perspective. Ohio State found that out. Ole Miss found that out, and so they ran into them. And so A&M's just out, in the first round. Tennessee, I don't want to use them as an example because I'm not sure they were as good enough to go to the playoff. But you just with the way they seed it and stuff, like last year, Penn State got SMU and Texas had to play Clemson. Now they both won. I think Clemson was better than SMU, even though, I mean, they beat them by three in the ACC championship game. But it's just one of those things with the kind of how they do it. And are, the byes, Indiana's the first team, the only team, I'm sorry, to win after getting the bye. The teams that get the byes into the bowls are 1-7. You have to wait 11 days between. I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot that goes into that actual tournament, but to get there, it's a challenge in and of itself as well, but it's way more open. It's way more open. A lot just depends on the schedule too. I mean, I mentioned A&M. Well, the schedule comes out for A&M over the summer. There's people, and they weren't totally off base, but they picked them to go 6-6. Why? Because, well, everybody expected Auburn to be good. Everybody expected Florida to be good. Everybody expected South Carolina to be good. And they weren't. Nobody was really all that good on A&M's schedule. And they ended up rolling through the season until they got to Texas, and Texas beat them. And they had the win over Notre Dame at the beginning of the year. And so that's not the Aggies' fault. You play the schedule you're given, but they did catch a break because some teams that were thought to be good were not. And so much depends on that. So how do you get there? If you're South Carolina, how do you get there? Like, you want to do as Indiana did. Well, I think first and foremost, the stars have to align a little bit. And Indiana this year, and I had a strong opinion about them last year. I didn't think they were all that good. And games against Ohio State and Notre Dame kind of proved that. They just weren't impressive to me. I thought Were they a team that had some impressive moments? Yes. Beating a bowl bound Nebraska team 56-7 in Bloomington was good last year. Going 11-1, no matter who you play, is good. It's hard to do that. Very few close games as well. But, they were riding high with a win over Michigan and a win over Washington. And those two teams were not all that great, And so, they deserve to be in the playoff over the three SECs that got left out that kind of were victims of their own tough schedule. No, I didn't think so. This year's Indiana team is a little different. And so the stars aligned for them last year to roll through the schedule, get to the playoff. And then what they did, and this is what you have to do, is you got to, South Carolina did not do that this year. You've got to take a good season and where you were kind of close or in the hunt. Maybe you make the playoff, maybe you don't, and then build on it. And if you look, Ole Miss and Alabama, the two SEC teams that were in the mix with Carolina that got left out in 2024, they made it this year. They did what they needed to do. Some interesting losses by the Tide, again, notwithstanding. Ole Miss went and took care of business, and they had lost their quarterback, Jackson Dart, and Walter Nolan, and everybody else. So you have to do that to kick in the door. I don't. If Indiana hadn't gone 11-1 and made the playoff last year, let's say they were 8-4, I don't know that we're sitting here doing that. But what winning does, what having that kicking that door down does, is it gives everybody in your program confidence to move forward. That's kind of an intangible thing, and you build on it. Not everybody does. South Carolina again went from 9-4 to 4-8. That was, and they did not catch any breaks on the schedule, but. I don't know who the offense was beating this year, no matter who they played at some points during the season. But you got that happened, and so you have to get back up, and it's a different not trajectory. The trajectory can still go back up for the Gamecocks. It's a different starting point this offseason. Expectations. Usually, I've seen some early predictions. It's way too early to kind of, you don't even know how. I mean, I guess with the portal kind of ending, you can guess, but you never know how it's going to go with some of these teams that'll be on the schedule. But I've seen some 6-6s and 7-5s. I think most people think the Gamecocks were not as bad player wise. I think people look at it and they see. Some really good players coming back and some additions through the portal and through recruiting. And, you look at it and they didn't lose a ton to the portal. And what they did, and it kind of depends on how you view Michael Smith and the tight end position. But what they did do is they replaced the guys that they needed to replace that they lost. Maybe not. I'd be lying if I said they have a tight end as dynamic and with as much upside as Michael Smith in the room, but they'll be fine there. And Kendall Briles with his offense, he does use the tight end more than they did at Baylor through the years when he's calling it. But I think that's just kind of the nature of the game. And who's to say Caden Ramsey couldn't fill the split tight end role next year? I'm not predicting that, but he is that kind of guy. And then the rest of them, have a chance. They're good players. Mo Brown, H-back, that kind of thing. But I can't sit there and say that you got another Michael Smith in the room. I can't say that. So that's maybe the only position that I look at and go, oh, okay. Vandrevious Jacobs left for Miami. Good for him. It's home. They played for a national title last night. Obviously, he was the best receiver, I thought. If you had to name a best one, Nick Harbor was very good and was up there as well. But I thought Jacobs was really, when he got a chance, didn't always get a chance, but when he got a chance, he produced. And that wasn't a surprise. But, Nitro Tuggles coming in. You have young guys like Donovan Murph, Jaden Sellers, guys like that that can fill that void. And I don't know that the receiver room, Sequel Patterson's coming in from the high school ranks. And there's guys returning. I don't. It stunk to lose Brian Rowe and Vandrevious Jacobs because I think both of those guys are good. But my belief is that the Gamecocks have they have a chance to fill those voids. Tight end, I just don't look and see anybody like Michael Smith in the room, but that's okay. It doesn't have to be similar. It could be different and still good. But at receiver, with Tuggle and Jaden Gibson and Sequel Patterson and Charlie Mulally coming in, I think that DJ Black is coming back. He's a very nice player from in-state, very fast player. There's going to be competition in that room, and they use a bunch of them, and I'd be shocked if there weren't a ton of additional targets for the passing game guys next year at receiver. So they have to be maybe the happiest of anyone. I think Jaden Sellers is going to be very good next year. If Nick Harbor can take another step forward, Donovan Murph needs to take a step forward. And then with Nitro and Jaden and the guys they brought in from the portal, they got to go in and contribute and they'll be fine at receiver. But, overall, South Carolina didn't lose a whole lot. So I think that you look at it and expectations are going to be not huge. I don't expect South Carolina to be predicted to go to the playoff. Maybe there's some outliers because some of these predictions just get dumb. They're like, when we get to around July, people are resetting their predictions on the social media influencers. Someone will throw a complete outlier out there. I mean, it's almost like the off season gets so long. It's kind of like, when you're young, or if you are young, and you're kind of out at the bar with your buddies, and the night goes on, and later, the more the night goes, the stupider you get conversation wise and stuff. And it's all in the name of a good time. But that's kind of how some of these predictions go. As it goes further, some of the outliers start to happen. But I don't expect a whole lot of off season hype like there was last season. I think that's a good thing. So you need to handle expectations and build off of good seasons. So that's another way that I think Indiana did it. I think you have to make great evaluations. And I think that no matter who you are, Nick Saban, he took a shot at recruiting rankings guys last night, but he kind of had his facts wrong. Josh Jacobs was a four-star prospect for 24/7 Sports. And Damian Harris was a five-star prospect, but anyway, he said something about Jacobs being a no star and Harris being a five star, and Jacobs is still in the NFL and obviously very good, and Harris isn't. But to the guys at 20, I don't think I was not doing rankings at that time, but to the guys' credit, they nailed Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs was an unknown in the state of Oklahoma. The Sooners didn't even know about him, so. That was good. But Nick Saban made great evaluations. Let's just put all the star rating stuff aside. And some of his guys, that he recruited did get some benefit of the doubt. It's not necessarily a Bama bump, but it was more a situation where usually if Alabama offered and wanted you, that differentiated you maybe from the other, slew of four-star players out there. Because they didn't take everybody. They weren't, there were some guys that were rated high. They made their own evals. And then, you have to make sure that you get players. Now you can do that way, like Saban did. You can do it the way Kurt Cignetti did it. Just by going older, valuing production over potential, that kind of thing, and then there's another way to do it. And South Carolina has been successful doing this. You kind of, it's kind of the fix you approach. You take guys that maybe had pretty big reps coming out of high school that in their situation, for whatever reason, be it injury, be it fit, be it just that they're not, they're slow developers. You take those guys and maximize them. All of that with evaluation, though, feeds into the bigger picture. Urban Meyer said this last night. Talent maximization in this world in college football, and this is where there's good signs when it comes to the Gamecocks, because they've not everybody, not everybody. You know, you probably do need a little higher clip with it. They've done a good job through the portal maximizing players. You know, you saw it last year. Sean Murphy's an example of that, in my opinion. Murphy's a kind of an older guy. Did not start off well. Was he perfect and dominant? No. But in some way, about midway through the year, the light comes on for this guy. And you know, you look at him playing, you look at him play the last half of the season, you're like, well, that's the guy that, you know, looks like everybody ranked him high, you know. He's a big rep guy out of Virginia, one of the top linebackers in the country. And now look at him. You know, he's starting to go approach that ceiling. You know, there's always the talk of Demetrius Knight and Kyle Kennard for 1 year in 2024 that happened. I think Vandrevious Jacobson, his second year out of the portal, who I mentioned earlier, he's gone now, but I think he got a lot better. So there's individual examples of that. Monkel Goodwin is an example of that. You know, South Carolina also has done pretty well. And this is primarily defensively with guys that developed out of high school. TJ Sanders. Man, TJ, that guy's really, really good. So Travion Robertson's done a really good job with that inside. I think Sterling Lucas before him at edge. And we'll see Deion Barnes, who has a track record of doing that, what he can do. So, you know, that's a good thing. So that's another way you can do it. You don't have to just get all under the radar guys or all known guys. You know, you can do it. The point is, if you maximize your talent, you know, there's a chance you're going to win football games. Not always, because that's an individual thing. Coaching matters now. I think coaching and scheme are very important, but what Indiana showed me, and this is why I think Kendall Briles was a good hire, or one of the many reasons, is, you know, on offense, simplistic chaos or simplistic complication wins the day in college football, especially with all the new players. There's not a lot of time to develop in a system over 2 or 3 years. And I'm talking about the whole team, not necessarily quarterbacks who have to develop over time as it is. But, you know, you look around college football and everybody, there's schools that just get 1 year rentals at quarterback. And so their scheme has to be pretty quick. You have to be able to learn it quickly. You just don't have, there's not enough practice time. I said this all year. I've said this maybe the whole Beamer era. There's not enough time like there is in the NFL. And what's great about Indiana's scheme is it is pretty simplistic. You know, it's a lot of just RPOs. He just Mendoza goes to the line, he reads the play. They down to down are hard to defend because you just don't get a lot of keys as to if they're going to run or pass. They're liable to dial up a run play on 3rd and 12 on you and catch you napping. Because what he's doing is he's up there, he's reading the box and just making the call accordingly. Speaking of, that's going to be very important for Lenore Sellers next season. He's got to master that. But the coaching, in terms of how they teach, how you teach the game plan and the scheme and the plays and all that, along with working with the fundamentals to maximize you individually, that's a secret sauce. You know, they don't miss assignments. Indiana didn't. They don't. Rarely does Mendoza miss a read. The way you beat that is do what Miami did and have a D line that just, you know, blows you up front or continuously gets pressure because it doesn't matter what you're running then, you know. But I do think that coaching matters a whole lot now. And when I say coaching, I'm talking about like in-game strategy, scheme, that kind of thing. And from the standpoint of, you got to be able to teach it to them and let them get it down cold pretty fast. So you don't really have time to be super complex, I think, to win in college football these days. And most of the good teams in the country are not. Most of them are not offensively. Defensively, you know, I think defense does get a little more complicated, but it's not. The defense is usually trying to react to what the offense is doing. And there's sometimes a defense will dictate when they're dominating physically, but that's a little bit different story. And I think that South Carolina's scheme under Clayton White's just fine. It's a aggressive, creative, and fun defense. And you do need good players at certain positions for it to be successful, but I think that they do a good job on that side. So, we'll see what Kendall Briles can end up bringing to the table in the offensive department. But coaching actually really does matter. Cignetti has won everywhere he's been. He's 146 and 37 as a head coach at Indiana, Pennsylvania, Elon, and then at James Madison. So he's a winner, and winning is winning coaches tend to be pretty good at what they do in game and with how they set up their program and all that. So you need good coaching. Can South Carolina have that? We'll see next season, because I think that the staff that Shane Beamer's put together on paper, we'll see what happens, is pretty doggone good. It's probably the best one he's had as far as experience and guys that are proven and all that good stuff. So we'll see how that all shakes out. And then finally, we talk about coaching, we talk about recruiting. Your players have to go execute and believe. And in today's world, what I've noticed is Indiana just, people are like, well, they play harder than everybody else. They do. They do, but they play smarter as well. And they use their ability to play hard with their ability to play smart. And it works. And the talent, overall talent gap, because remember, it's a talent maximization game, is no longer so wide that it doesn't matter. And I've used this example before too. Well, JC, the service academies play hard and smart all the time, and Navy will just get slapped by Notre Dame when they play them and things like that. True. That's true. But that's a talent gap. There's way more. I mean, but Indiana, just pure talent wise, it doesn't matter what they were rated coming out of high school. They probably, yeah, they had seven or eight 4-star or better guys on their roster. But they've probably got 20 NFL guys, right? And that's good. That's, maybe they're late round draft picks or whatever, but they're still going to play professional football. And some of them, may not measure that well at the combine or all that, but they're great players. And guys like that usually stick around in the pros. But, and we'll see about all that. But, so Indiana's talent level is close. I say all the time about the Gamecocks when people start griping about, oh, the portal class last year is what caused them to go 4-8. No, it wasn't. The talent gap in the SEC is no longer as vast as it once was. I mean, everybody's got players, right? And then some teams don't have as many players as they once did. And so you're not going to go out talent anybody. If it was just about talent, Texas would not have lost two SEC games this past year, and they would have been in the playoff. They would not have struggled with Kentucky and Mississippi State on the road. So I think that, some of the, if people would just talk about reality, some of the big spenders and like, oh my God, look, how is this going to happen? With all these teams loading up and buying all these players. And yeah, of course, we love the players, and those are elite players. And that they've set themselves up pretty well, right? However, it's impossible to get a gigantic gap. Does that mean that the team with the best roster will never win again? No, not at all. Ohio State won it last year with the best roster. Had Miami won last night, I don't know if they were the best, but they were top three. They were up there with Texas and Ohio State and maybe a handful of other schools. Ohio State was just a little younger this year, but they're still very good. So, but there's no longer this thing where you've got the haves and the have-nots from a pure talent standpoint. And are there gaps? Yes. Yes. I mean, you can put everything in order all you want, but where there used to be insurmountable gaps, there's not anymore. And so that's another positive thing. And that gives South Carolina hope, where South Carolina lives. in the middle class of college football, that what Indiana did gives you hope. And I think that that's should be inspiring to everybody. It's not a blue blood. It's hard in this sport. Like I mentioned earlier, when Florida won at 96 for the first time, that surprised nobody. Florida was knocking on the door for about, since Spurrier got there in 1990, 6 years. This nobody predict. I mean, the Indiana was 20th in the preseason poll. So yeah, so that should inspire everybody. If Indiana can do it, South Carolina can do it. If Ole Miss can go to the semis, South Carolina can go to the semis. And the good news with all this is all this time we spend in college football talking about all the crap and the decisions and all that good stuff. The reality is, from a Gamecock standpoint, as much as we do gripe about the sport, it's positive for programs like Carolina if Carolina does what Carolina has to do. That's they have to do it well. There was a portal addition yesterday I'll talk about real quick on the offensive line. Ibubedike Nabugwu. I'm pretty sure I practiced that before I came on. Tired of butchering names. 6'5", 305 pounds, from Missouri State. 618 snaps at left tackle, 185 at left guard. Alabama and Oregon State were also in on him. So another offensive lineman coming from the lower levels will come in and compete with the rest of them. I like the pickup. I think he's got good feet. He's athletic. Obviously, going from one level to another is a challenge. A challenge for some, not a challenge for others. It kind of just depends on the player. But, what you want is the raw ability and the film evaluation to be there. And, we'll see how it goes. But another offensive lineman, that's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I'll tell you, that's a room that's been completely revamped. And, I think everyone would agree that as disappointing as it was, and it is disappointing that Tree and Trevon Ball and Jatavius Shivers and guys like all those really good offensive line recruits that they signed are gone, or not all of them, but a lot of them. That is disappointing. They did get Josiah Thompson back. But, when something's not working, sometimes you need to kind of blow it up, right? And the players have to play. That's another part about Indiana. The players have to go out and play. And I noticed sometimes in games, specifically against Indiana and specifically Oregon, as talented as the Ducks are, they just didn't – they fell behind, didn't want it. Dante Moore, those guys, well, that's it. And you gotta ward against that, and I think on the offensive line at South Carolina, the last couple of years, I know that, there changes had to be made, right? It just was not working. But I don't know necessarily that it was, 100% coaching. If it was, I think a lot of these guys would have stayed. I just think it had just gone wrong. And, nothing against Lonnie Teasley or the players that left. I hope they all do well. Most ended up at Power Four programs. But, at the end of the day, we'll see kind of how it all plays out with that. And at the end of the day, I think what was right for the South Carolina Gamecocks is this path, right? And it is, and while saying that and fully admitting, it's very disappointing that more of those guys did not pan out. But we'll see how these guys pan out, right? Don't forget the morning show coming up on Inside the Gamecocks on the Chief Sports Network. You get it on the Chief Sports app. You can download that on Google Play or Apple. It's live at 10. Preston Thorne will be in. We dropped the JC and Morgan podcast version of last night's national championship thing. That's also on a new podcast channel. JC and Morgan College Football Podcast is where you can find that on Apple and Spotify. If you go to the old one that says College Football Forever on it, that's with 24/7 Sports. We had to leave that behind. Phil and I will be along for the show. It's Terrible Tuesday. Sports Talk with Phil Kornblut We'll stream 6 to 8. The Gamecocks do play basketball tonight. Oklahoma comes to town. And I'm sure that we'll have some discussion on that as well. This has been Coffee with JC Sherbert on a post the end of college football season, folks. Oh, man. Felt like it lasted a little too long again this year, just in terms of getting to the championship game, but it does go by quick, man. All right, I'm out. Holla.